pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Declarations of War. I am your host, Alexei Carr, joined by my co-host, Artemis Albosa.
Howdy, howdy.
Well, no Andy this podcast. He is unfortunately out sick, but we are forging on. A pretty cool, tight show to talk about. The big news, obviously, a new CSM has been elected. The results are out. So we had a poll. The CSM represents my playstyle and interests well. Now, keep in mind, this poll was put out and concluded before these results were announced, but it was a straight 50-50 as to whether the CSM represents the playstyle and interests of our audience. 50% had agreed, 50% strongly disagreed.
Now that's interesting. Nobody strongly agrees that it represents their playstyle. Maybe it's just the fact that Eve has a bunch of bitter bets. And so that's why everybody's like, yeah, okay, I guess they're doing a good job. Or no, darn it, the CSM is crap. They don't represent my interests. Yada, yada, yada. I don't know. Maybe it could be that, a NullSec player would agree that the CSM represents their interests because there are so many NullSec candidates, whereas a small gang player or a wormhole player or a low-sec player, high-sec player even, with only one candidate on the and that candidate maybe not completely agreeing with all of your viewpoints, you could definitely have reason to strongly disagree.
I could also see it as, you know, the less than 10 player identity has really come into focus a lot more sharply in the past year, and they really didn't have a candidate on the last CSM. This CSM, it's arguable, but I would say they probably do. Torvald, I think his name is? Yeah, Torvald.
Is it the first time they have like a proper small gang candidate? First time in a long time,
no.
At the very least, right?
No, not even.
When was the last time?
I want to say CSM 12 or 13. I have to go back. I don't remember the councils by heart that far back. Well, definitely a lot to unpack in this CSM, so let's talk about our winners. We have one of the more surprising, if you just looked at what he's interested in, but if you keep in mind he was one of the only PL actually in PL candidates, it makes sense. Kenneth Feld from Habit. He's actually an industrial player, so industrial NullSec on the council. Merkelchen got re-elected. Yeah, he was an incumbent. He's back. That is a goon candidate. Gobbins from Pandemic Horde. Pretty expected. He was the exec of Pandemic Horde. He's going to be top of their ballot. They have a lot of players. Brisk Rubal, top of our ballot. And I was chatting with him. So no one has put out like the deep dive who got eliminated when type analysis. CCP does make that info available, but you kind of have to have the program ready to run it through.
CCP actually did a nice little graphic video where they showed it. Unfortunately, they didn't also put in the description, like list by list, round by round. But you should definitely go and like watch the video if you haven't, because it not only shows sort of who was eliminated, but also where their votes went when they got eliminated, which is actually pretty cool. I'll try and grab the link real quick so we can get it for the show notes.
Oh, yeah. I haven't checked that out. Didn't know it was out, but I could not wait to watch that. It's fascinating, because quite possibly, given where Brisk was placed on the Imperium's ballot, it is possible that Declarations of War voters, if you guys followed the ballot that I put out, we may have kept him alive long enough to get in, which is pretty cool. Again, I'm super impressed with Brisk's tenure on the CSM. I was super sad to see him resign, super happy that he is back. Did not resign for any like CSM performance-related issues, rather resigned due to CCP conduct issues.
Is he still considered an incumbent, even though he skipped a year?
I would say no. I guess by definition, he wouldn't be. We've got Vili from Test. Again, very expected. Test, Massive Alliance. Of course, they're going to get their guy on. Phantomite from Same Great Taste. This is a low-sec candidate. Well-loved, I think. He was number 2 on our ballot. Really impressed by his performance on our panels. And it was really cool to see him get in. Innominate, another Goon Swarm, another incumbent. Mike Azariah is back, baby. I was really happy to see Mike. You never want to say Mike is expected to win because he is an underdog candidate anytime he runs. But since he is, at this point, such a long-term serving member of the CSM, to the extent that HiSec decides to vote, they probably voted for Mike. And he probably has a lot of runoff votes from other ballots because he's pretty university well-liked, even if he isn't like highly placed. As you mentioned, we have Torvald from Abyssal Lurkers. And finally, this one surprised me, but in hindsight should not have surprised me. Maria Taylor from Fraternity, representing the Chinese bloc. Fraternity, you know, they're a sizable chunk of players. They have a small coalition of their own. It's kind of makes sense that if they're running a candidate, that candidate would get on. I didn't necessarily expect it over some other candidates like Russian or Wormhole Block. You know, there were a couple other blocks that didn't quite make it on that you would kind of expect to be on, but there's only so many seats.
The Wormhole Block not getting on doesn't surprise me, given the drama surrounding Azuki. And you could see, did CCP delete this video? I cannot find it anymore. But in the video, it showed how long Azuki managed to stay in the race, and then when he went away, like, half his votes didn't go to Luriseko. The divide in the Wormhole community, I think, is what made it such that they did not have a candidate this election cycle.
Which, you know, I mean, the Wormhole community's never been united, but they've usually been able to put their differences aside to get some CSM representation. So it's very interesting to see just how personal the recent string of invasions has become in terms of setting up this real animosity there.
The Chinese representative is interesting. I know they've tried in recent memory to get candidates on, have just straight up been unsuccessful. In this particular case, coming just from Fraternity, not Army of Mangos. But I suppose, would Army of Mangos have cast their lot with Vili, given Legacy Co?
That's a good question. I don't know. I think there probably would have been a little bit of a divide there as well. Obviously, the Chinese national identity can be very strong, Chinese cultural identity. Likewise with Taiwanese players, if that's the mix. But at the same time, Mangos and Fraternity do not get along that well, so they might vote more along their coalition lines. That's where I would love for that ballot analysis to come down. I immediately checked Noisy's blog, Nosy Gamer, if anyone is interested in looking it up. He usually has fantastic CSM election analysis. This time around, he basically said that he wasn't going to do it because he figured that the ballot would be fairly predictable. But if any other blogs like that start doing an analysis along those lines, I strongly encourage you to reach out to me, or if you're a reader of that blog, send the link over, because it would be fascinating to cover a more detailed breakdown of like which alliances ballots were followed, weren't followed, you know, which voting blocks went where. All that kind of information would be super interesting.
Okay. One of two things happened. I am very sleep deprived, so I might have just thoroughly imagined that this video existed, but I cannot find it anywhere. I think CCP might have deleted it, which is very confusing to me, unless like they did something wrong.
I mean, I didn't see it or didn't hear about it, which isn't to say that it doesn't exist, but
I must have been having one crazy dream to dream about a video analyzing CSM 15 election results. if I did make this up, I'm both disappointed and amazed in my brain.
That's Artemis's fever dreams. CSM election analysis videos.
Whew, okay, let's move on to another less concerning topic.
Agreed. Well, this might be concerning depending on which side of it you're on. But there's evidence that the invasion, the Triglavian invasion, has been reducing security system statuses. And we've talked about Raravas and how that's become basically a gigantic bloodbath. However, it's not the only one now. We've also have, what is this, Sakenta in the Forge. And I looked around the map, a few other places. I can't guarantee that these places have had their security reduced, but it certainly looks like they might have. Dipari, what's this other one? Aegfi in Metropolis, Trosser, and Sugawa all have high sec systems with massively increased kills in the last 24 hours. Which is pretty darn cool. Apparently that is what happens if you let the Triglavians win hard enough.
It's very, very strange. I saw a battle report from a system, because apparently it can go both ways. It can both go down in security status, but also up, depending on which side is winning at the time. And so there was this amusing battle report that, not Wang's, Pen is out. Yeah, so Wang's were in a harp fleet. And of course, they're faction warfare pilots. So depending on the area of space, faction police will kill them. In this particular case, they were in a Mars base. And so when it flipped back over into high sec instead of low sec, all of the FACPO spawned and just nuked the harp fleet.
Whoops.
So that's rather amusing.
This whole event has been pretty cool. It kind of realizes something CCP has often talked about, which is player action shaping the universe. In the past, it's been kind of a soft storyline way, but hasn't really affected the in-game environment that much. This is players actively rearranging the geography of Eve, which is a huge step.
One thing that confuses me is it seems like, well, I'm not sure if it confuses me. In CCP's recent new, like, EVE Online ad, they specifically say, maybe I'm reading too much into this, that EVE Online is an expanding universe. And they say this while they're looking over the map of all the systems. And Triglavians turning systems into nullsec makes me feel like those systems, like those low-sec and high-sec systems, have to be replaced somehow, right? Is CCP going to just reduce the amount of low-sec and high-sec permanently? I wonder if CCP is going to add more systems into EVE again. Maybe make like Triglavian regions accessible permanently through the Triglavian conquered systems or something like that.
Ooh. I haven't heard that theory, but I like it. That would be cool. Right now, I think it's an open question as to if these changes will be permanent at all. I haven't heard confirmation one way or the other. The fact that the maps and the APIs aren't changing kind of leads you to think that maybe it'll be temporary for the event. But could be they just wait till the event is done and then kind of make the back-end changes to make whatever the players did permanent, which would be neat. I would definitely love to see rearrangements of the high sec and low sec depending on player preference and to the extent that players are willing to work for it. Now, I will say this. If you're out there thinking of getting involved, going to any of these systems, expect to have just so much killing. you better go for a fight and be advised there are lots of big fleets running around these systems. The other end of it, if you're thinking of joining the fight to either push these systems in one direction or another, most of the time, it seems, the EdenCom side, the side that's pushing for high sec, is of higher volume. However, the Triglavian side is more organized. So if that's would help sway you in any way, keep that in mind. You're fighting uphill with the Triglavians but you're also a bit more of a tighter-knit group from the sound of things.
Does this balance change once the new EdenCon ships come out?
That's a good question. You've got to imagine a lot of the folks on the EdenCon side are doing it in hopes of getting these ships.
Well, not to mention, are the NPCs for EdenCon using the EdenCon weapons? Or is it just like Concord or what have you?
Don't know. I haven't actually been able to personally participate because Mara's been doing contract stuff.
If you're out there, dear listener, let us know. Hop on our Discord if you happen to be in it and tell us, what are the EdenCom ships using? Because the new EdenCom weapons could definitely turn things around. They look to be pretty good. Especially if it's being used versus NPCs, which wouldn't have the tactics necessary to counter them.
Speaking of those ships, let's talk about them, because they're kind of interesting. The big story is, of course, they are bringing a new kind of weapon system to the game, or at least a scaled-down version of something we already have. If you've ever heard about Keepstars, you're probably familiar with the Keepstar Doomsday weapon, which is a chain lightning doomsday. You fire it off at one target, it'll do its damage to that, and then it'll bounce up to five other targets. These are basically going to work the same way, except they're not doomsday weapons, they're just normal weapons. And apparently not super good ones, from what I've heard. They're a bit lackluster in the damage department, which is, I guess, how you would have to balance it, but still a bit disappointing. Yeah, you're disagreeing?
My thing is, in the damage department, first of all, the mechanics they use to apply their damage is a bit interesting. It's like the fighter application, so they're turrets in terms of the way they look and the way they're described and everything, but they actually use explosion radius and explosion velocity versus player signature radius and ship velocity for damage applications. So they apply, like, sort of like missiles, very much akin to how fighters apply. At least this is the way it was when it first hit CC and I was paying attention. So that's one interesting thing. They also don't seem to be impacted by various like tracking computers or tracking enhancers or anything like that, which adds another interesting wrinkle to the mix. But my thing with the damage is, if you're using these things effectively, you're going to be hitting multiple targets with them. And if you're hitting multiple targets with them, then the damage just get multiplied by however many targets you manage to hit. So I think even though the single target damage might be relatively low, the fact that you can hit multiple at once is going to be the key saving factor. It's sort of like smart bombs remote controlled. Smart bombs with, like, that you can send over that way, but less powerful, which have their uses. I don't really imagine it changing a lot in terms of NullSec meta. The applications they use mean that hacks are already good counters to them just because low seg, high speed. If we were in, as an example, a battlecruiser meta, then I could imagine things changing because, not because the battlecruisers would be hard countered by this, but rather because in order to accommodate sort of an AoE weapon, we've seen it in the past where instead of just having everyone anchor at zero, everyone orbits at 15k. This is what people used to do on Keepstar fights when we had the super overpowered bomb launchers with the nude bombs, or when bombs were a big deal. Everybody just, you spread your fleet out and you anchor at 15 kilometers. And battlecruisers, some of them, like the Ferox, have the range to accomplish this, but others don't. So if we were in more of a battlecruiser battleship meta, I could imagine things being shooken up just because the impact of having a 30 kilometer diameter spread between the closest of your fleet and the furthest of your fleet puts quite a lot of strain on the range requirements for your weapon platform. But given that we're already in hacks, and hacks with long range at that, plus they have low seg, high speed, which is good at avoiding the damage of these things, I don't think it's going to change much.
Yeah, I also doubt it. It's going to revolutionize NullSec fleet tactics like a lot of people hoped this kind of weapon system would. Could always be wrong in that, but it's just my initial read. The one evolution you might see is a slight increase in the popularity of orbit-on-target doctrines, particularly for like medium-range weapons, but nah, probably not. Those weapon systems are fairly unpopular as it is, and I don't see that changing terribly much. The other interesting thing about them is they have shield resist bonus and quite a lot of fitting. So I've heard talk of them sort of being like a shield command ship type, and fitting like conventional weapons, in other words.
Oh, yes, that was one other thing I meant to mention. As I understand it, and again, these things, there's not even a dev blog explaining their stats. They're still on CC, they're still in dev, stats could change. But when I was looking at them, they had significantly higher relative shields than other shield platforms, sort of like the Terglavian ships. They just have a crap ton of their hit points in armor. These Endocom ships appear to have a similar deal where they just have a crap ton of their hit points in shield, which could make them very, very tanky if it, like, works out the same way the Triglavian ships did. But I'm wondering if CCP has learned their lesson from the Trig ships and is maybe going to tone that down a little bit.
Oh, you say learn their lesson, but last time we've heard from CCP on the subject, they were extremely happy with the performance of the Triglavian ships and felt they were extremely balanced.
I think that's true purely on the basis of the weapon system limiting its operation in large-scale fights, whereas the Endocom ships, they thrive in large-scale fights where they can apply damage to multiple targets at once and really add some chaos to the battlefield, so to speak. So I feel like you can't take as many liberties with having lots of fitting room or particularly useful hit point spread, so to speak, just because it would get overpowered really fast in large scale fleet fights.
But I do think one obvious thing that I'm a little surprised CCP isn't doing, but because it's so obvious, it kind of makes me think it might be intentional, is making the fitting requirements for the gun extremely high and then giving them a roll bonus to reduce those fitting requirements to whatever they're comfortable having, and then giving the ships more normal fitting bands.
Did they fix it so that you can now, like, not fit the Edencom weapons to other ships? I know when they first came out, people were, like, fitting 8 of these things to a Vindicator and doing 2k DPS with them or something stupid like that.
I haven't heard that, no. I haven't heard that one way or the other. But again, a lot of this stuff is purely theoretical because it's still in the testing server.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to have a look at it once it finally works its way out. Using fighter mechanics on proper turret application is very interesting to me. Also, one tactic we should mention, I was watching a video, Billy was testing out the new Edencom ships, and he was theorizing that if you wanted to deal with the balance of the weapons, because unlike the normal DDs from Keepstars, which bounce based on mass, these ones, it's purely random with some restrictions. It's only going to hit certain types of things, but of those things that it can hit, it is random in what it does hit. So if you want to keep your ships from getting hit by the bouncing damage, then just launch a crap ton of drones, because every ship, or just about every ship in most NullSec fleets, will have a drone bay with at least a couple flights of lights that you can fit. So everybody just launches some light drones, maybe some acolytes or something with T2 resists that are relatively good against the endocom damage types, which, if memory serves, are EM and kinetic, sort of the polar opposite of what Triglavians are. And then the arcing damage goes to drones, which are high speed, tiny sig, and have relatively good resist profiles depending on which ones you're using.
In before Burst Scorp Edencom meta. Well, it'll be pretty interesting. I'm sure we'll try it out. I'm certainly going to take a good look at these things in PyFo once that release is out. I imagine they'll be a little prohibitively expensive, at least initially, but you know, I'm sure we'll do a NAR fleet of them after a bit and let everybody know how it goes. Speaking of NAR fleets, we just came off a contract against NRVD. This is a small high-sec war deck corp. Not the type of targets that we usually go for, but a old friend from NAR's past hit me up because these guys had war decked this corp and were starting to hit his POCOs and his citadels in this area near Amar. It wasn't too far from Kamal, so I was like, sure. Wouldn't normally do this contract, but happy to. And because they hadn't actually reinforced anything yet, it was kind of up in the air as to whether we would do more of a defensive thing or more of an offensive thing. And it wound up being a mix of both. We helped the employer defend a few structures, and then because the value of those structures didn't really add up to what he was paying us, we went on the offense. Started hitting some POCOs, started hitting some citadels in particular. Their Wardeck Citadel, the Wardeck HQ, was an Astra House. It was very well fit. We were able to reinforce it, but were not able to actually kill it on the follow-up. These guys were able to consistently field a Four Leshak, two Guardian, Four Leshak, three Guardian, and Lachesis fleet to defend. Pretty sure it was one or two guys multiboxing, but those numbers were more than we could deal with on a Citadel grid. We tried and almost got away clean, but they managed to snag one of our Leshaks. Kind of a grim moment for everyone. We micro-jumped it out of point range, but unfortunately not in line with something. So as it was turning, Citadel missiles caught up with it and popped the tank, which sucked. But other than that, we really didn't get much of a chance to engage these guys. We kept trying to arrange a way to catch their fleet. We had one where it was kind of close, but high sec, everybody's using scout alts. It's really difficult to get an engagement from a fleet that doesn't want to be engaged upon. And these guys fainted like they might want to fight us for a bit, but every time we managed to, you know, turn around and go, all right, let's do this, they would back off. We did wind up popping a few of their POCOs, though. Not nearly that many, because it turns out a bunch of them are on dead planets and it wasn't even really worth our time. But we did get a few. And Employer wound up losing, I think they lost a POCO, and that was because we didn't know the timer, something like that. But everything else was saved. Overall, pretty successful contract. Interesting challenge. These guys were very tight. It was good fighting them. It was good practice for us. Really forced us to be on our A game. And we, you know, we ate a little bit of humility not being able to kill that Citadel with our fleet, because we had been, you know, rolling over these Citadels in wormhole space, including on a fort, but with a extremely competent, well-fit defender. Nah, we just didn't have a chance. Too much ECM flying around.
I was not happy at all about the way the timers worked out for this contract, because, I mean, granted, I never even deployed because I was too busy with work and could barely log in to set my skill queues, but I was never able to go on a single fleet, which was very disappointing, because this sort of op where we have targets who are going to fight us and we're flying Leshaks and all that jazz, which are super fun to fly for me, I was really pumped when this contract was announced. I'm like, all right, we're going to bash some POCOs. I can do that when I get home from work. We're going to shoot some structures. I can sign up for those fleets because I can plan for them. And then nothing. So, like, all I know about this contract is the stuff that got pinged for ops. And we were doing a lot of ops. I definitely, and I saw the kill board, we were killing some POCOs too. It was nice. But
yeah, it was very active contracts. Those fleets almost
every night.
Which
is strange for a high sec contract.
Mm-hmm. Well, it helped that things were going back and forth. You know, we were reinforcing their stuff, but they were also reinforcing some employer stuff. So we had a decent mix of attack and defense contracts. And generally speaking, they tended to alternate.
It is an interesting question, because they weren't attacking our structures. They were attacking one of our allies' structures. How was the communication there as far as being able to respond when something was actively under attack? Because I feel like if they're actively attacking something, it provides an opportunity for you to go out and catch them while they're in the act. But if everybody's planning for a timer and has scouts in place, your ability to respond is limited.
It was mixed. We did, I think, have at least one chance of catching them while they were RFing something. But, like, as we jumped in, they warped out kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there's, like, the one Poco that we just didn't get word about, and that dropped. Might have even been before our deck went live. Now I'm thinking about it, trying to remember, but I can't. Yeah. Overall. And we had one where they had reinforced this Astra. I think it was on final timer, and we're just sitting there. And they're on the other side of this gate. We're like, okay. We're about to engage. And then they brought more Logi. They're like, okay, now we need to wait again. Wait for another guy to log on. Finally, we have enough. We undock and warp to the gate, and they warp off and dock. It's like, ah. I'm staring at these guys for like 30 minutes. So there's a lot of that.
Fun times.
Yep. And speaking of, we're back in Cloud Ring right now. Similar contract, different area. We'll be bringing you guys all the latest once we conclude that contract, which will be, I shouldn't say, actually. Not too long. You guys will hear it soon enough.
This is also another contract where when it was announced, I'm like, all right, I remember how this one went last time. It was a lot of fun for me. Here we go again. And then haven't been able to log in since.
Work was like, hold up, wait a minute.
You want to do something other than sit at work? I don't think so.
Aren't you locked down, quarantined, Artemis? Come on, man.
No, I'm considered an essential worker.
Oh.
Legit, I have a note from my employer that I can hand to the police if I get pulled over, and they can call a phone number and they will confirm, yes, this person does in fact work for this employer and they are considered an essential worker under the government order.
Wow. Where, what, your place is actually doing that? They're pulling people over that are driving?
We've had a couple of people who've been pulled over. That's actually why, like, we had to go and get the note to make sure that it happened. And there was a way to confirm their employment. But yeah, well, prior to all the riots and protests and stuff, people were getting pulled over. Now the police are a bit preoccupied.
That is bananas. I mean, California's got pretty strict quarantine laws, but I have driven from San Francisco to Oakland up and back twice since the quarantine and didn't run into any of that.
Interesting.
I didn't even see anybody get pulled over. Like, nothing unusual. Now, what they will do is, like, if you're in groups of three or more on the street, they will come up to you and break you up. I've seen that.
I haven't seen that, but then again, I haven't been outside, like, to see groups of people around. But I think it could be because I'm right next to the border between two states. So it might just be that the police are extra vigilant for people, like, going state to state and traveling like that. But then again, they wouldn't be under the same stay-at-home order if they were from one state versus the other. I'm not entirely certain why they're so, like, vigilant about it here. Because the virus spread isn't even that bad here. But then again, maybe it's because they're so vigilant about it. I don't know.
It could very well be. All right, moving on to host highlights. This was a nice little kill we got while we were moving into the staging system for Cloud Ring. I was literally on our move up. We're all in the Harbingers that we're using for this contract, except for one of our NAR Academy guys. And we come across. So when we had war decked the NRVD guys to attack their Pocos, we had to also war deck their holding court. Now, when you ally onto a war deck, which is what we did for the main corp, NRVD, that's fine. You just ally on, no big deal. When you offensively war deck, other people can ally onto that war on the defender side. And so we had a bunch of War Deck alliances do that, presumably just for the free deck, because we never saw them. And one of them was Black Flag, CEO'd by Commonwealth Mercenaries. Used to be in Marmite, which disbanded. Pirate, which disbanded. Which
also disbanded. Yeah, both of them have since disbanded.
Well, they formed their own alliance called Black Flag, all caps with a dot at the end of it. And like I said, we hadn't seen them or any of the others that allied onto the War Deck, but we were vigilant for them because, you know, they could still do some stuff. And the war had been on a timer now, so it was about to end, but we still had a little bit of time to shoot. As we're moving through, Baphomet, who I'll talk about in a second, he managed to spot with his alt this Black Flag Vedmak, which was solo reinforcing, I think it was a Raitaru, in the system just before Losec. So we're like, huh, Anamon, that's high sec, don't have to worry about gank, there's no other war targets and locals, just this dude. He might even be AFK reinforcing this thing, you can't be paying too much attention. Okay, let's see what we can do here. So, Baphomet gets the warp in, and then we have one of our Nora Academy guys, Arcel, do the actual tackling, because all the Harbingers, you know, were configured for the jump bridge thing, we don't have points. There'd be no point to having a point because the lock time is so bad. But Arcel's in a Tristan with a point, so he could do it. So the plan is to get the Tristan, the warp in, and the Vedmak, and have the Harbs warp even ahead of him getting the point, so that when he points the guy, we're just about landing, and we can kill him before the dude warps off. Or, you know, kills Arcel and then warps off. Which actually has worked out pretty well. We managed to nail the timing just as Arcel lands in the sky and points him is when the Harbingers are landing. He tries to pick up speed as we start to lock him, but we've got lasers. He doesn't have too much of a tank. He's got like double reps, but our alpha is just crazy because it's four or five Harbs. So we cut right through his shields. We're starting to cut through his armor. I think he might have been a little late on the rep or something, because we're blowing through him pretty quick. He does kill Arcel, but is not able to warp off in time, and we managed to bring this guy down 225 and a half mil in Vedmak at the cost of one Tristan. It was super clean, great teamwork between Arcel and Baphomet to get the initial tackle. And yeah, it was just a nice, hey, how you doing, as we were getting set up in our staging system. Arnus, what about you?
My host highlight has been setting my skill queues for all of my accounts to train the shacks. One of these days, I'll be able to log in. And when that day comes, I'll be able to put like 8k DPS into a fleet.
Nice. Speaking of major impacts... my shout out goes to Baphomet. He's a relatively new recruit of Gnar, but man, has this guy made an impact since he came in. So we have five voting categories for payouts. You know, when Gnar has a contract, we kind of vote as a team who should get the money, and at least half of the contract money goes to that. He got three out of five categories, including MVP. And well deserved. He was on for just about every op. He was always multi-boxing with the scout alt minimum. He would provide scouts for the Leshaks to get back and forth, in addition to being a Leshak pilot himself. He could also swap into a Nestor. He even, I think, called for a fleet and ran a fleet. So he was pretty much doing it all. And since that contract, in fact, he's done even more, where he has stepped up to become more and more of a leader in the corp. And just an overall nice guy as well. So incredibly happy to have Baphomet with us, and he absolutely deserves all the big pile of ISK that he got. Armas?
My shout-out goes to CCP. I've been browsing EVE subreddit. I've been browsing ZKill, browsing YouTube as I'm on my breaks at work, just trying to keep up with things, and it seems like CCP is just continuing to kill it. The 2-week dev cycle, the constant small updates, tier side, all the crazy lore stuff that's happening right now, like the way they've integrated lore and live events into stuff that players actually like engage with on a massive scale, not just the RP lore nerds. That's like, well done, CCP, legitimately. I'm thoroughly impressed. I haven't seen any major blunders, unless maybe I missed something and everybody outraged, but then forgot about it within like 24 to 48 hours.
No, I think for the most part, they've had a pretty undisturbed momentum streak, which is very rare.
Very rare, but very welcome. Shout out to you, CCP.
Okay. And with that, we are done. Go to decorationsofwar.com to participate in our show poll. Reminder that NAR is recruiting. If you would like to join and participate in our Gladdering contract and all future contracts, super happy to talk to you. We are also considering, for the first time in a long time, bringing in corps into our alliance. So if you are a PvP corp and you want a taste of the merc life, good time to join. And if you're looking for some PvP training, you're a newer player or maybe an indie guy, you've dabbled in PvP casually, but you're listening to this show and you really like the sound of it, you want to get into it more, check out tinyurl.com/noiracademy. It's tinyurl.com/noiracademy. Apply to our Academy Corp and you can go tackle Blingfit Vedmax. I gotta once again reemphasize how smooth and slick that tackle was. That dude. I think we gave him all the loot from that. Like, it's just so impressive for a new player to pull off something with that kind of timing and precision. It was really cool to see. Can't wait for that dude to graduate and get into Noir proper. Anyway, we also have CafeNoir.in-game for more info, including a link to our Discord. And wherever you are, particularly our listeners in the US, Canada, and the UK, please stay safe. But also stay engaged. Happy 4th of July, and don't lose sight of what that holiday means. It's USA number one, yes. But also, we're number one because we have a checks and balances democracy with self-evident human rights. And, you know, we bucked authoritarian might makes right divine rule bullshit. So that's what this country is about. Stand up for that. And wherever you are, good hunting, listeners.